This is one of those halachos that I'm glad. First of all, we're in Hilchos Deos. We're about to start Perakei Halacha Daled, chapter 5, halacha number 4. And this is one of those halachos that I'm glad we're getting to a little later in the year, when hopefully you're mature enough to be able to handle it, right? I can count on you. I can count on you, Mavo. So, Afalpi, she'ishto shel adam muteret lo tamid. Even though, technically, you know, obviously excluding, you know, hilchos nida when a woman's in nida. But aside from that, a person's always permitted to have a relationship with his wife, right? You know, under certain circumstances, assuming she's okay with it. Ra'ui lo l'talmid chacham she'anhig atzmo b'kedusha. A talmid chacham is supposed to... You're supposed to conduct yourself in a manner that's a little above. Kedusha. There's a holiness to everything. Hashem has to be in the equation. V'lo yehei matzui etzel ishto ketarnegol. Okay? You shouldn't be like a rooster. The rooster in the Gemara is that... is the allegorical example. If we lived in an agricultural society, I wouldn't have to explain this. I will leave a part of this up to your imagination. But basically, without going into the specifics, the rooster has many wives, and this is his main activity. The rooster doesn't do much else. The rooster is the king. The rooster just snaps his fingers or clicks his toes, cocks a doodle doo, whatever, and they come running. And that's all he does. He just services the ladies and they make eggs, right? Yishtabach shemo, right? And so not going to go anywhere on this topic, but that's not how a person should be. That's not why you get married, right? Ela milelei shabbat lelelei shabbat im yesh bo koach. But if a person has the strength, at least, you know, once a week, Shabbat, whatever it is. So what do you do with this halacha? Yeah. No, it's definitely not a halacha. There is no halacha that prescribes the amount of relations a person has. This is what's called an eitzah. The Rambam, remember, the Rambam here in Parakeh has taken us from Parak Gimel Dalet, which is the how we physically arrive at moderation, right? How you balance, to now how you find spiritual moderation in your physical activities. Okay? And this is a prime example. You know, the more physical an activity is, the more of a challenge it is to see if you can elevate it and transform it to be more than just a purely physical experience. I'll give you an extreme example, okay? We were, this is the beginning of the second intifada. I have to tell you, of all the experiences I ever had in the army, I don't believe I ever had a worse month in the army than this month. And of all the experiences I had this month, this was probably the worst night of the entire experience. This was my first reserve duty. So in addition to everything else, I was like this, you know, you go from being, it's like when you graduate elementary school, and you're the eighth grader, right? You're the king of the block, and then you go to being a freshie, right? I think it's a shock to your system because you were the king last year, right? So it's the same thing. You're an officer. You've been in the army for 4.5 years. You're the melech. You know your way in and out. You get your second bar. You're like, you know your way around, right? All of a sudden, you're in miluim. You're in reserve duty, and you don't know the ropes yet, and it's the first couple days of reserve duty, and you don't even know the guys' names yet, and you're supposed to be giving orders to guys who were like, you know, they fought in the Yom Kippur War. I mean, they're your dad's age, some of them. And you don't know the ins and outs. You're not quite sure what's acceptable, what's unacceptable. Add to that the fact that the Israeli army is a very loose army. Like, after basic training, like, you know, where they want to instill this in you, nobody salutes you. You know, like, people call you by your first name. There's no sir in the army, in the Israeli army, like, once basic training is done. So you're used to that. So in Milim, it's even more than that, right? Like, if a reserve duty soldier has an issue with you, he'll tell you. If he disagrees with something you're doing, he'll tell you, right? So, on top of all that, we landed into the second intifada. We were totally unprepared for this. Basically, I don't know if you know the history of it, but there was a truck, an Israeli truck that was going through the Gaza Strip, had an accident, slammed into a parked van, and killed a couple of pedestrians. And for various reasons, the Shtachim, the Yehuda, Shomron, and Aza, were like a tinderbox, basically, waiting to be set off. And rumors spread throughout the Gaza Strip.
The Shtachim.
Shtachim are the territories, right? That's what they call them. Yehuda, Shomron, Aza. Basically, the areas captured, 67, over the Green Line. And to this day, there are debates whether it just happened, whether there were forces at work that were determined to make this happen. I could hear both sides of the coin. any case, rumors spread that we were out to capture, you know, kill, maim, murder, whatever it was. And basically riots started. And they spread all over the Gaza Strip. And eventually they spread all over, you know, sort of Yudah Shomron and Aza. Rocks, Molotov cocktails. This was before Oslo. It was before there was a Palestinian Authority. So there weren't as many guns then floating around Yudah Shomron and Aza. But the Israeli army was completely overwhelmed. Okay? And by the time I got to Milouin, which was the third month of this, we were already deep into like riots and hundreds of people coming out in the streets and axes and knives and burning tires and Molotov cocktails, whatever. And in places that just a year earlier I had gone on patrol with one other guy and we would be in a jeep just driving through, now you weren't allowed to drive into Aza unless you had two vehicles and you had to have at least 12 men and all this sort of stuff. So one night there's a village near Mahzom Erez, near one of the checkpoints going into Aza. This particular village, Bet Lahi, I think it was called, was making a lot of trouble. And we knew that there were terrorists inside there. We knew that there were arms, whatever. But to go in during the day was just a very dangerous proposition. So what they decided to do was to go house to house at like 2, 3 in the morning. Okay? And basically to surprise all these neighborhoods and just go in. They had like a whole brigade that was going in there. And they cordoned off, you know, neighborhoods in Bet Lahia. And they were going house to house. And to the credit of the Israeli army, or certainly the soldiers I was with, all of us had a very difficult time with this. On the one hand, there was no doubt that we knew we were doing the right thing. We found two slikim, which means that you go into a house and you notice something under the sink, and then you see there's a loose floorboard, and you start to pick stuff, you make them pick stuff up. And underneath the floor, we found this whole amlach. We found an RPG. We found machine guns. We found two Israeli M16s that were stolen from soldiers, like the whole nine yards in a couple of houses. But you have to search like 100 houses to find a couple. And you're waking up women and children in the middle of the night, and you can't leave people in their bed because God forbid somebody can, so they have to all be herded into one room and somebody has to watch them so they're safe and you're safe. Very uncomfortable. And at the beginning of this, you're going house to house. It's completely quiet. It's completely silent. And you know that at any minute somebody can open up on you. And there's this incredible, I can't begin to describe it sitting here in Base Manners, but there's this incredible pressure because you have so many different factors that you're thinking through. You have to be conscious every minute of where the other units are operating because you don't want to get into a situation where someone pops out of a house and he's got a gun and it's the middle of the night and it's dark and you think that he's, and you start to shoot at each other. So you're constantly getting feedback through your radio operator of where this unit is and where that unit is and where northeast of you, and you have to remember where the coordinates are and where you are, and you have to be aware of where you are on the map, and it's all dark. And every house looks the same. And you have to be in charge of your men. And you have to know where each of the guys in your platoon is and which rooms he's searching. And every time you break into a house, and sometimes they open the door and sometimes you have to crash it in, whatever it may be. And you really don't know what's waiting for you on the other side of the door. So there was this guy. And I remember he was from Yeshivat Ma'alei Adumim. He was a Miluimnik. He was also a young guy. He was, maybe this was his second Miluim. And he was a chapash, a chayal pashut, a regular soldier. And he happened to be the third in the line. In other words, there was me, there was the radio man, and there was him. And I would be getting regular radio reports, but we're in Mishmat Laila. We're supposed to be walking like with night discipline, right? Like you don't talk like this. You're totally quiet. Everything is covered. Everybody's diskit. Everybody's dog tags are covered with black tape, and all the canteens are quiet, and everybody's to be walking quiet. You're not talking. And the radio is on quiet, and the radio man has to have the thing to his ear. Right, it's not like sort of, it doesn't squawk, right? And he would come and whisper in my ear, right? Like when there was a report. The idea was to keep it quiet because every house that you can get into before other people woke up was safer, and it was safer for you, it was safer that you would surprise them so you had a better chance of catching things, whatever. And I hear this like murmuring. There's like a murmuring, you know, behind me. And I didn't get what it was. This is before the age of cell phones, right? I would have assumed he was on a cell phone, but it sounded something, right? So, you know, I don't see who it is because it's night and it's a shh. Misham Daber. Who's talking, right? And then I tap the radio guy and I say, Mishmat Laila. You know, night discipline, which he's supposed to pass back and he passes back. And then I hear it again, this murmuring. And we're about to go into this house, right? And so I step out of the line, which is not such a bright thing to do, and walk out to see who's talking because this is the kind of thing that gets people killed. And I see this guy. He's an ex-Hesdernik. He's from Ma'alei Adumim. I remember his face, but I don't remember his name. Little blonde guy, little wispy blonde beard. What's he mumbling under his breath? Want to take a guess? Nope, not the Shema. Yeah.
Myrus.
Nope, not Myrus. Three words. No, that's what I thought. No. Three words. And he was repeating them again and again. Okay? He was just whispering under his breath, L'shem Milchemet Mitzvah. I said, what are you talking about? He looks up at me, and he knew I was dati, and he said, L'shem Milchemet Mitzvah. Right? So at first I wanted to slap him. Right? And then I started thinking about it. Like, that's a very deep idea. You know, if we were to continue this afternoon in the Rambam and Hilchos Tzitzis, you would see that when you make the tzitzis, there's a minhag that you're supposed to say, L'shem mitzvah tzitzis, when you make the tzitzis. Why? Because you should have intent that you're not just tying strings, you're doing this for mitzvah. Right? One of the themes that you must have picked up on by now here is that so many people run through the mitzvot instead of experiencing them. And the idea of stopping, of slowing down, of realizing what you're doing, of doing L'shem ha-mitzvah, you know? Like Ariel was davening Musaf now up on the roof. And there's a place in the Musaf on Rosh Chodesh, right? Mizbeach Chadash B'Tzion Tachin. Prepare for us a new Mizbeach. Let us come back to Beit HaMikdash. And you're standing up there, and you're looking out on Har HaBayit, and you can actually see the exact spot where the Mizbeach one day will go, the Mizbeach HaChitzon. You can see it. And so you stop and you appreciate what it is you're saying. So I thought, that's an amazing idea. And what he's done, and I have to be honest, I was so immersed in the physical side of it, in the coordinates and in the frequencies and in where the kochot, the units were, and the fear that somebody would get hurt under my command, and all those different things. I was so immersed in the physical side of it, it wasn't even on my mind that I was in the middle of a mitzvah. Right? That blew my mind. And I realized he was right. He was right. There's a Rambam that I used to keep in my pocket, which I recently found, whatever, in one of my madim when I went to Miluim. So I have it here, whatever, once in a while it gives me a little chizuk. It's the Rambam from Perek Zayin, from the seventh chapter of Hilchot Melachim, Laws of Kings. This is the last set of halachot in the Rambam. Right, the Shulchan Aruch starts with Hashkamat HaBoker, when you wake up in the morning, and it basically ends with Hilchos Avelos, right, when, from cradle to grave. The Rambam starts with Yisodei HaTorah, with the foundations of faith, and he finishes in Hilchot Melachim, is when Melech HaMashiach will come, when Melchemet Mitzvah, all these things. In other words, from creation to redemption. So the Rambam is sitting in a cave, by the way, writing this, somewhere outside of Cordoba, because the Almohades and the Christians are at war with each other, and he's wanted, and if they find him, they'll probably torture him. And that's where he wrote the Mishnah Torah, most of it. And listen to this halacha that he writes. Talk about transforming a physical experience. Mi aish hayarei v'racha levav kimashmao. Pasuk says in Dvarim, whoever is, you know, if a guy is soft-hearted, if he's afraid, so at least with a Melchemet Rashut, certainly, when you're an expansionist war, you don't necessarily have to go. Right? She'ein bilibo koach lamod b'kishuya melchamas. There are all sorts of discussions in a situation like that. What does that pasuk mean? Well, he's afraid he has chataim. He's afraid that the Rashi there quotes a medrash. He's afraid that once he spoke in between putting on the tefillin shel yad and the tefillin shel rosh. If a person had a hefzeh, it's an unbelievable thing that that's what he's worried about. So that's a whole deeper idea, right? But Rambam says, no. Ein b'libo koach lamod b'kishuya melchama. He's afraid. He can't handle the intensity of war. I met people like that. Very difficult for them. U'me'achar she'ikanes b'kishuya melchama. And if he comes in, and b'chol zot he's involved in a war, right? What should he do? Yish'an al mikveh Yisrael u'moshiyo be'etzara. He should lean on the wellspring of Israel. Put yourself in Hashem's hands. Literally, immerse yourself, your thought process, in the fact that you're doing avodat Hashem. V'yeda she'al yichud Hashem u'osem milchama. And know that such a person is fighting a war for Hashem's name. To bring Hashem into the world, to bring peace into the world. Right? And a person should just put into his heart and not be afraid. Now, I remember the first time I read this Rambam, I was like, that's ridiculous. Has anybody here ever been in an experience where you're really afraid? Does it help to say, don't be afraid? It's ridiculous, right? Except what the Rambam is saying here is that if you really immerse yourself in the fact that you're just a vehicle in the world of Hashem, then there's no reason to be afraid, because everything will always work out, whether you know how it will or not. Right? V'lo yachshov lo b'ishto, v'lo b'vanav, v'lo imchev zichronam. Right? V'chol, whatever, we don't have to go on the rest. So the Rambam there, and this is a theme in the Rambam. How do you take a physical experience and transform it so that it's not just a physical experience? And this is the apex. You know, the Rambam says, what is the most spiritual experience you can have in this world? What would you say? What's the highest spiritual moment you can have in this world? That's what the Rambam says in Maran Vuchim. The Rambam says the highest spiritual level a person can reach is the apex of relations in a marriage. If it's in a marriage, if it's committed to something bigger than just the physical relationship, and if you can actually elevate. By the way, that doesn't mean that a person is not supposed to gain pleasure from such things. But even that pleasure is part of the gift that Hashem gives you, and it's part of what you're trying to accomplish in this world. And that's what the Rambam is saying here. Right? If you really get that all these things are part of a bigger picture, then you're not a rooster. And if you're a rooster, then you don't get it. And this is also part of moderation. Now, as most people think that moderation is about halacha, but even within the realm of halacha, a person can lose moderation. Right? I don't know, is there halacha? Let's say you're tired. So you're tired, and you want to put your head down. So halacha, are you allowed to put your head down in the basement? Are you not? Right? So, you know, if you're putting your head down for a moment, I'm a big believer in power naps, personally. I'll sometimes, you know, when I'm really tired, when I come at the end of the day, I'll go upstairs, I'll grab 20 minutes, and for me, Baruch Hashem, it works. Come downstairs, I have koach, I'll learn with the kids, I'll do whatever, and I can stay up till 2 in the morning, but I need that 20 minutes, right? So that nap is a nap that you're taking to get a little koach. I know some people can do this, you know, I can do this in my office, I can close the door, put my head down for 20 minutes, take a little power nap, and whatever. I remember there was one morning, a while back, where for some reason, maybe after I flew back, I slept 2 hours. So I snuck into Rabbi Aaron's office. He has a sofa in there. I laid down, you know, for 20 minutes, and that was it. I was able to go for the rest of the day. So in moderation, that's a healthy thing. But imagine you lie down, and you sleep for a day and a half. And you think this is great. And so every day you come in, it's a comfortable sofa. That's great. So I said, Rabbi Aaron, yeah, that's a great day. That's Mova's ideal, right? So I said, this is great. So I said, listen, I have to teach Hilchos Deos. So at 10 o'clock, I'll go to sleep. Then I'll wake up again maybe for the fellows. Then I'll go to sleep again. In fact, why go home? I'm here already. Right? Why shower? You waste good sleeping time. So obviously that's ridiculous. Right? If you can elevate this to a level of Kedusha. And by the way, this raises another question. What do we call a marriage in Judaism? Nope. Chatuna is a wedding. Right? And we don't even use the word so commonly, but it is b'yom chatunato. Kedushin. That's the Masechta you're studying. Kedushin. Do you ever think about that? The way in which a man and woman come together is a sanctification. That's what it's supposed to be. If two people come together and it's just about the physical, and you see this all the time, right? There is not... By the way, why? Why do you think that a marriage... which doesn't have a higher goal, doesn't work. Let's say two people are infatuated with each other and they're doing it purely for the physical aspect of it, but they're ethical people. So that's what they do. They do it, you know, as long as they enjoy it, and then, maybe they never stop enjoying it, and if they stop enjoying it, so get a divorce and find something else. What's wrong with that? Is there anything wrong with that, by the way, la'alacha?
No.
Nothing wrong with that, la'alacha. If you decide to marry a girl every week, you marry her on Sunday and you get divorced on Friday, and then you marry somebody else on Sunday and you get divorced. And when I say, of course, your money, I mean, it's expensive.
There's the rabbi in the Gemara when he travels somewhere, he'd arrange for there to be people, I guess, or some people explain that he was actually Makadish, but every time you travel,
what's wrong with that? And by the way, that Agadita is all about this question.
It's being a little bit of a Navajo.
Pardon? So that's one way to look at it, right? The Ramban says, we mentioned this once, I'm kadoshim to you. He says, what does it mean you shall be kadosh? He says, alti en naval bershut haTorah. Don't be a pig with the permission of the Torah, right? It's easy to be a pig within the confines of halacha. Anybody who thinks that once you keep halacha, you're covered? Halacha is a recipe. But if you don't put the ingredients in right, if you don't use it right, it doesn't get you anywhere. You can be a pig. You can be a halachic pig. It's very easy to be a halachic pig. So what's wrong with that? What's wrong with it? So you marry a girl on Sunday and you divorce her on Tuesday, and you marry another one on Thursday and you divorce her on Sunday, and you get to fool around, you get to have your one-night stands, but you do it al pi halacha. What's wrong with that? Seriously, I'm asking you. What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
I didn't say halacha. I'm telling you, halacha, it's not a problem.
Each one of those excursions doesn't have a purpose in itself.
No, its purpose is to give you pleasure.
Okay. It's You don't have to. I mean, when you have a chocolate bar,
it's not going to give you. It's not going to give you pleasure.
Pardon?
They're not going to give you pleasure.
Oh, it might give you pleasure.
Well, now you've been studying Michta Meliyahu, so you're going to say to me, okay, so what is real pleasure? I'll buy that. But let's say a guy doesn't care. He just wants physical pleasure.
What's he does care?
Pardon?
Well, how can you say he doesn't care?
I don't know.
He's a human being.
Oh.
Pardon? On a level, maybe not.
Yeah, there are people who don't care about me.
They're going to destroy you internally. I don't know from the inside out.
Physically or emotionally, because that will give you AIDS.
What?
No.
Destroy you from the inside out.
No, no, you can find a way around that. Sissy, what's the problem? I'll tell you what the problem is. Anybody? Pardon? Well, if you're mutually doing it, it's not using. I checked it up online. It's in Movo's Special Dictionary of Terms. Yeah? What? Isn't that... Clearly the Rambam would say that, but why? What?
You're using Kiddushin to permit relations, but that might be a side effect of Kiddushin, not necessarily the reason.
Okay, so that's one way of looking at it.
As far as we know, Hashem didn't get bored with us 7 days after creation and say, oh, might as well create another world. Like, I think with having...
What was it? Medrash that says there were 1,000 worlds created before this world. Took a while to get it right.
Before, but then they were destroyed, no?
Yeah.
So if you killed them, well,
that's a different idea. So one way of looking at it is like what Zevi was saying. One way of looking at it is like, imagine somebody gives you, I don't know, what would be the best car in the world to get? I'm not bucky in cars. A what?
Someone gives you a computer and use it as a
kid. No, you want the Bugatti Veyron.
What's it called?
A Bugatti Veyron.
A Bugatti, okay. So somebody gives you a Bugatti, and you think it's a good clothes closet. And that's what you do. You keep your clothes in there, right? Some people here do that, by the way. We give you a dorm room. It's a clothes closet. Okay, we said it's a closed zone, right? It's a no-trade zone, right? Okay, so there's nothing technically wrong with buying 30 cars and using them. One is for your underpants, and one is for your socks, and one is for your shirts, and whatever, right? But you take a step back, and there's something off with that. Because the potential that each of those items have is much greater than just a clothes closet, right? So everything that comes into your life, Hashem gives you for a reason. And that's what Kedusha is. Right? If you remember, we talked about tefillin. We said that Kedusha is the ability to bring Hashem into the world, which means to develop a relationship with the world, with Hashem. And we said that the root of being able to develop a relationship with Hashem is trying to tap into the purpose that Hashem has for you. So everything that Hashem gives me has purpose. I just have to try to figure out what it is. So when someone like that comes into your life, right, the entire process of Kedushin, what you're trying to do in creating that relationship is to ask yourself, do I fulfill my purpose more by being with this person? Does our collective whole greater than the sum of our parts, right? And that's what it is. So within the context of that relationship, if it becomes just a physical relationship, it's losing its potential for spirituality. But by the way, if it's only a spiritual relationship, that's also not good. Because Hashem gives you that relationship physically as well. Judaism is not an ascetic religion. That's not the goal either. So that's what the Rambam is saying. The Rambam is saying you have to find that balance. Right? You have to find that balance. The problem, by the way, Misha, with doing that Sunday to Tuesday, Sunday to Tuesday, is it's like planting a tree, right? And then deciding you're tired of it. And every Sunday planting a tree, and every Tuesday chopping it down, planting another one. So at the end of the day, you know, you'll only have one tree. You never allowed that tree to grow and to produce its fruits. Right? That's the problem. Yeah, the good old days, right, okay. Right? Halacha, okay, we'll stop here. Because if we get into halacha, hey, I think it'll take us a while. Okay? So we'll stop here. Oh, we're in the middle of halacha dalin, actually, okay? To be continued. Seder, I want you to have some morning seder. Boker tov. Chodesh tov.